the cathedral order for February 1st, 2001. First duty, you have at your place an announcement of a meeting for Monday, February 12th from noon to 1 in hearing room 357. It's going to be a presentation from the Community Learning Centers. Lunch will be provided for this committee and for the Senate committee. It's going to be an outstanding presentation, so please plan on being there.
When is that again, Mr. Chair?
Monday, February.
It's on here.
Oh, it's on here. Never mind. Thank you.
Is that a large room that we're going to be in?
Fairly good size.
Because the basement room was adequate before, but this is even. Okay, good. This is adequate.
We're taking what we can get.
Chair Cruz?
Yeah.
I have put in a request to be excused that day because I have some business back in my district that I need to tend to. So I didn't know if the clerk needed to know that, but I'm hoping they'll circulate that request back to you.
I think I heard it somewhere.
Okay, so. Good. Okay. I hate to miss it, but I just wanted you to know why.
Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bills 2515 and 2516 together, seeing how they are related, and I think we got folks that want to talk to both, and the panel is Senator Nelson and Greg Vidger and Whitaker. Senator, welcome.
Well, thank you, Chair. It's always a pleasure to be here, and I want to thank the committee for the work they did during the interim and traveling throughout the state of Oregon. I know Representative Morissette and Representative Crummell, and I don't know if anybody else was there. These are all new electees, but I really do appreciate it, and I want you to know that the people out in that area were just thrilled that you were out there and looking in their concerns. Part of the reasons I'm here today is because of that trip. The needs for rural health are just are very great, and in our present budget system, as we've heard in the last couple of days, there is a great demand for services and a limited amount of money. So what we need to do, I think, is to think about some innovative ways in which to fund some of these needs. And this proposal, this concept of rural foundation, I think, is a model that's been tried in Washington and is working quite well, and I know you have people here today who will be speaking to that. Basically, the funding for that is we're proposing that you take the rural nursing homes that are owned by the counties, or they're in conjunction with a hospital. They call it the medical upper limits. Something that's called MULE anyway. That's the acronym that we have. And there's it's a federal program. As I understand, it's going to be phased out. My idea in this whole process is that somehow or another we develop the concept of developing some seed monies. You develop this foundation, give them the charge to go out and try and raise money someplace else. And the key thing, I think, about rural health is that the needs are great, but since there are less people there, in a lot of cases, the amount of money that you need is maybe not as significant as it would be in an urban hospital. In some places, some of our areas, $500,000 makes a lot of difference. I'm the senator. I live in Pendleton, but I represent Wallowa County, which is Enterprise, and Union County, LeGrand, Hermiston. I'm just a little bit north of Heppner, which has a small county hospital, and they do have those needs. This is an attempt to bring some innovation into the process and allow services to be rendered to these folks out in eastern and, well, actually all of rural Oregon. So I'll let the experts come in here. I just want to know that I'm very appreciative of the things this committee is doing. So, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. If not, I've got another committee to go to.
Questions from the senator. Let's send them on.
Senator Nelson, I just want to thank you for hosting us at your house the evening that you did for the barbecue and the very gracious opportunity to exchange information. It's wonderful.
Yeah. We had a grand trip, didn't we?
Yeah.
It was great to Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Greg Vigdor. I'm president of the Washington Health Foundation. It's a pleasure to be visiting your fair state today. And it was a pleasure to meet Senator Nelson last year and hear of not only his commitment to rural health, but the commitment of the Oregon legislature. It's an issue that I have worked on for many years, not only in Washington State, but in New Mexico. I formerly was a senior vice president for policy and advocacy in Washington for the State Hospital Association, but now I'm a full-time foundation president, which will suggest to you that we've had a pretty successful model with what is being proposed here. I've got a lot of background in health policy. There are two important streams that I think are important for you to know about. One is that I have some expertise in how it is we create disproportionate share programs and Medicare upper limit payment programs, and use that to connect with one of my other passions and specialty areas, which is rural health. One of the things I came to believe the more I worked on rural health was that we really needed to use a word that is sometimes difficult for legislators to hear and other policy persons to hear, and that's subsidies. That a lot of the facilities that are in the rural areas are so small, and the scale of the health problems that we have really need to find some new streams of money to be able to keep those services out there for the people who live in those areas. And we found some ways to do that, disproportionate share of Medicare upper payment limits being the most important mechanisms that we found. And we directed some of those monies directly to the facilities that participated. But to speak to the vision that's represented in this bill, what we also had was a vision that there were a lot more facilities and rural communities in the state of Washington that we wanted to benefit. And since they were not direct participants in these programs, we had to find another way to do it. So our vision was to create a health foundation that could serve that purpose. The approach we took is a little bit different than it's reflected in your bill, reflective of the Washington laws and a little bit more flexibility that we have. And we created a foundation that is not a rural health foundation. It's actually a statewide health foundation supporting communities across the state, urban and rural. Although I would probably have to estimate about 50% of our activity is really focused in on the rural areas of the state. Let me speak to just a few pieces of what it is that we are doing. And one piece, and I don't know if you have these materials, but one brochure that you have will reflect, I think, what's in your bill, which is trying to use the grant power of a foundation to spread the money to a broader class of participants. 2 years ago, we created our Rural Health Viability Grant Program. We did our first cycle last year, 2000, and distributed $600,000 worth of support. And it was primarily operating budget support for not just hospitals, group practices, nursing homes, public health departments, home health agencies, a wide class of participants. And in many cases, the money that we distributed was the difference between making it and not making it for those participants. Our hope, I think, again, we're taking a slightly different approach than what I understand to be the case here. We created what we call our ProShare program, our Medicare upper payment limit program, in 1999. And every year we are trying to add another slice of the pot into the foundation that we operate. I would hope that by the time this program is phased out by the federal government, that we will have close to $17 or $18 million total into our Rural Health Viability Grant Fund. What we have also done with our foundation is to emphasize that there is a leadership obligation to try to help these rural communities think beyond some of the immediate problems that they are facing, fulfill those immediate needs, make sure they're viable and can provide service to the people who live in those communities, but try to find a different answer. And we have a number of programs that do that, the most important of which is what we call our Future of Rural Health program. And what we are trying to do there is develop some creative models, any models that have not been tried anywhere in the country, and putting aside some of our money into demonstration project grant blocks, where we will try to stimulate some thinking and work on some new models that will provide a more sustainable future for rural health in Washington communities. And there are a number of other programs that we have that try to push the envelope in terms of making change that will fulfill things over the longer term. The last piece I'll just note for you, again, I mentioned it earlier, but it's important to understand that our foundation is a statewide foundation, and what we are trying to do is create change and a positive future for health throughout our entire state. We have 5 goal areas in our foundation, of which rural health is one. We also have an access goal, a community health goal, a quality goal, and a leadership goal. And there are a number of programs, in fact, 21 programs in all, under that broad umbrella. And I think what that represents is the possibility of thinking beyond just the immediate problems we have for the entire state and reaching to a future that will really work and trying some very creative models to do it. Our foundation has been in place since 1992. It's going fabulously well. We're quite proud of it, but at the same time, we understand we really haven't solved any problems yet, and it's probably going to take another decade or more to do that.
Send them more stuff. Thank you. Do you use just the interest then off of the money that's contributed? Does it, or do you just collect money and redistribute it?
We mostly use the principal from a block of funds that are dedicated to the Rural Health Viability Grant Funds. One of the decisions that we made early on in the creation of our foundation was to use the interest income for the benefit of all in our state, and that's where we find the capital to generate new programs and new activities in urban and rural communities.
Other questions? Karen.
Thank you, Chairman Cruz. For the record, my name is Karen Whitaker, and I'm the director of the State Office of Rural Health at Oregon Health Sciences University. I'm really pleased to be here today to speak on behalf of House Bill 2515 and House Bill 2516. I'm just going to give you a little bit of background information. I know that a lot of you are familiar with all of these issues because you were on the trip, the two trips that took place last year. And I'm also pleased to note, and thank you, Chairman Cruz, that we had a chance to meet with Representative Walker last week and talk about a rural health work group or subcommittee, and I'm really feeling very optimistic about that. So I really want to talk with you briefly about just two things today, and then you're going to hear from actual hospital administrators and people who work in rural areas. I want to talk about the need for supporting a rural health infrastructure on three levels, talking about rural hospitals, rural health clinics, and then our experience with rural emergency medical systems through the Senate Bill 911 grants that our office administers. And then briefly remind you of the importance of supporting rural health systems as a means of economic development and what an important economic engine healthcare is to a rural community. And if you will look at the first, I think you all have handouts. The first chart, and I know this is very detailed. That's why I printed it in two colors so that you could see the red on the one side here. I'll give you a copy, Craig. This is one reason why rural hospitals have difficulty getting access to capital. If you'll notice on the next to the last column on this sheet, the operating income from nearly all of our rural hospitals, both type A and type B, is negative. Some of them manage to overcome their negative operating margins and have a positive bottom line, but that is generally not a sustainable source of revenue. It may be bequests, it may be investments, it may be some tax support, but as you'll hear later, that's generally less than 10% of their total revenue. So when you go to a lender and you have that kind of negative operating margin, it really is pretty impossible in this day and age to get any kind of serious consideration. That's one reason why we really need to have some form of capital for our rural hospitals in the state, some source where they can go to make the necessary modernizations. Many of our rural hospitals, and you'll hear some more details about this, were built back in the late 40s and early 50s with Hill-Burton funds, and many of them have not changed much since that time. So in order to compete effectively with larger health systems, they simply have to modernize their facilities. And then I'll draw your attention to the second page, which talks about our rural health clinics, who would also be potential beneficiaries from a rural health foundation. Fortunately, we just had access to a report that was done at rural health clinics and published in January 2001 and gave us, I think, for the first time, some really definitive information about how the rural health clinics are faring in Oregon. And as we suspected, they're not doing very well. We have 30 rural health clinics in Oregon, and when I talk about a rural health clinic, I'm talking about a federal designation. It has to be in a health professions shortage area designated by the federal government or a medically underserved area. Because of that, these are very fragile facilities, and in many cases, they are the only source of care in a community. And if you look at this graph is pretty tells it pretty well. If you look at the income of our rural health clinics in aggregate and then the expenses that they incur. So they also are forced to go to non-operating revenues from year to year in order to keep their doors open. And in the past year, in fact, two of them have closed. And they do car washes, they do bake sales, they seek donations, and they really have to scrap for money every year. We have had, in the past two biennia, some very modest support for safety net clinics that they've been able to take advantage of. Last session, we distributed $1 million statewide to urban and rural safety net clinics, and the average rural health clinic got around $11,000. Which was certainly appreciated, but didn't go far toward resolving their financial problems. They serve more than 27,000 patients annually in very rural areas of the state. Their operating margins actually range from a minus almost 150%, and I'd have to look more closely at that to see how they do that, to 23.7%, and 60% of them have negative operating margins. The report that I'm referring to that was published by the Oregon Primary Care Association concludes that 12 of our 30 clinics are either at risk or very vulnerable to closure. So we're very concerned about rural health clinics and see this as a real potential for supporting those clinics. And finally, I know that many of you are also familiar with the Senate Bill 911 program that was passed by the legislature last session, and our office has been very pleased to be able to administer that program. We started out thinking we had an awful lot of money to give away. We had about $640,000 to give away this biennium. We've had requests for more than $2,500,000 so far. We've given away about almost $500,000, and I can honestly say that the requests that we've received have all been worthy requests. None of them have been frivolous requests. We've been able to purchase three ambulances now. Many of the recipients come to us with a laundry list of very basic kinds of equipment needs that they cannot afford to buy. Most of these organizations